from the Prince George Study Group.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Mitch Pillsbury, and I'm an alcoholic.
No, Mitch.
I'd like to thank the group for having me down. I got reached out after a couple of your home group members shared their stories in Prince George with us. We definitely appreciated that. And then, so as we do for other AA groups, we return the favors. So I was able to come down a couple weeks ago, but with work, I haven't been able to make it with the guys. So it's been nice to hear that everybody's coming down to Suffolk. Suffolk is a special place for me as far as Alcoholics Anonymous. I originally got sober when I was 22 years old, right in Suffolk. The other Friday night Suffolk discussion meeting was where I actually picked up my white chip. Mm-hmm. I will be forever grateful for what I learned in that time I was sober in this area. And actually, Steve and I were home group members together in Craddock back then. But I'll get to that here in a minute. My sobriety date is April 12th of 2023. I do have a home group, the Prince George Study Group. We meet at Saturday nights at 8 o'clock in Prince George. We are a open discussion meeting focused on AA literature, where we have a chairman's choice. The chairman picks a topic out of AA literature based on the solution to alcoholism, and that is what we discuss. And we do have a speaker at the last Saturday of the month. I do have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I do sponsor other men, and my sponsor knows he's my sponsor. I guess I'm supposed to say in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm not very good at a general way, so bear with me. I grew up not far from here, Portsmouth and basically the Tidewater area. I'll go ahead and say that I do have a father that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He is here tonight. And out of seven children, I'm the only one that never saw my father take a drink. But I'm the only one that ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous also. Not to say there aren't some contenders, but they'll have to figure that out if they are. I do remember my first drink. I had older siblings that, you know, they did a lot of partying and, you know, had fun. And I remember I was around 7-8 years old. And a bunch of me and my friends had stayed in a tent beside the house that night. And somehow it came about to go take a couple of your brother's beers. And I still don't understand how this happened, but I ended up with a plastic container, Tupperware container. And they passed that first beer around and everybody hated how it tasted. And somehow those two beers ended up in that container and I sat there and drank them all, just to basically prove that I could do it. Even at that young age, I still remember that feeling that I got of those kids looking at me like, wow, you know. Don't know if I got, I probably did get drunk being 7 years old. I do have that memory of actually, that I would have to say that was the first drink of alcohol I ever took. Went on, you know, I was very rebellious as a kid. You know, my mother and father were separated at the time, and you know, I could easily push over some things on my mom. You know, I knew if I complained enough, I whined enough, or I, you know, I could do what I wanted. And I did. Ended up a little bit down the road of me not behaving in school, not really drinking, you know, it was just not behaving. I remember my father telling me, probably when I was about 13, he said, you know, and actually it was a little older than that, but he said, you know, you have an alcoholic personality and I suggest you never take a drink. It was a few years too late. Mm-hmm. I ended up After a while, I ended up living with my dad out in Southampton County. Was a three-sport athlete. Played quarterback for Southampton High School, baseball, basketball. Very good student. You know, I always had great grades. But it was always, I had to have this certain stature in the community. I couldn't be myself. I had to live up to the expectations of everybody in the area, I felt. Because I had to carry myself a certain way, because if I didn't, somebody, it was going to get back to either the coach, it was going to get back to my dad, it was going to, you know, I just couldn't be who I wanted to be. After a little while of that, I ended up living with my mother for the last 2 years of high school. Some things were going on with, between me and my father, and it was we felt it was best that I live with mom. But as I said, when I was younger, I could get away with what I want. I knew how to get away with what I wanted with my mother. So that ended up, we lived in Southampton. She dropped everything she was doing, quit, you know, moved her job out there so I didn't have to, you know, switch schools, because I was being recruited by some colleges, so we didn't want to up and leave that and lose that. And she dropped everything she was doing and moved to Southampton County, and that was the epitome of selfishness and self-centered to what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. She would leave basically every other weekend and come down to this area and stay with my siblings, just to visit. And the common question around my high school for those last couple years was, is Mitch's mom out of town this weekend? Because that's what we had a lot of fun. And, you know, for a lot of my drinking, it was fun, you know. And the big book tells me there's a time that I probably could have stopped. But why? You know, it was fun, you know, it was... where it talks about that it was, you know, release from care, boredom, and worry. It was, that's what it was, you know, and it was a lot of fun. I don't remember the time or the exact date or when it actually happened that it stopped being fun. It just all of a sudden stopped. It became more of a necessity than a fun. You know, and that's pretty much how high school went for those last 2 years. Partying every weekend. I will go ahead and say drugs are a little bit a part of my story. And you know, if you drank in the 80s, 90s, or 2000s and you didn't smoke a joint, where were you? you know, but I understand later that, you know, I was just using that to try to intensify the alcohol, or keep me going, basically. But I do know I'm an alcoholic. You know, because those other things that I was involved with and other things I did, I could set them down and walk away from them. Alcohol, I could not. Ended up earning a scholarship to Hampton University to play football. Ended up getting, you know, I dealt with some depression over a relationship leaving high school. And really ended up getting injured at Hampton. But basically I lost a lot of weight. I was doing a lot of partying. I was doing a lot of other stuff. And it ended up catching up with me. And basically I wasn't physically able to do it when I got hurt. And it was basically an excuse to just get out. I was really tired of living, trying to live up to the expectations of others. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to play anymore. But made the excuse that I got hurt so I could walk away from it. Bounced a couple colleges, ended up at James Madison University, pledged a fraternity. That was a lot of fun. You know, and that's what it was. You know, it was party by day, party by night, and there wasn't much school involved. Ended up going down to Virginia Tech for another year. And towards the end of that third year of college, I said, I'm gonna take a year off. And because I didn't know what I wanted to do, I didn't know where I was going, because really all my high school and everything leading up to that point was revolving around sports. And then when that was gone, there wasn't really much point. And then I And I decided to take a year off, and I haven't seen a classroom since. So this was, I ended up moving back in this area, rekindled some relationships with some old friends from school, and things started to spiral very quickly out of control. It was a constant party. It was constant. Back then, I loved the bar. I loved the limelight. I loved, you know, going into that bar. I could sit there and talk to you. I could be anybody you wanted me to be, you know, and I didn't have to face who I was. I could tell you anything. I could, you know, convince you of anything, at least I thought. And then it just got to the point where, you know, enough was enough. I got to that where it talks about in the book about the jumping off place. You know, I couldn't imagine living life with or without alcohol. I was wishing for the end. And really wanted to die at that point. I had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous through my dad a couple times. I had gone to a couple meetings with him, so I had an understanding of what it was. And a couple of those meetings that I had been to, I had met a gentleman, his name was Mike, and I remember calling Mike one morning after a really bad night out in the Portsmouth area, and we talked, and Mike ended up taking me to the Friday night meeting in Suffolk, and that's where I decided to get sober. I picked up the white chip, ended up moving in with my dad for the first year I was sober. And I was done, you know, I was whipped. I really was. Even at 22 years old, you know, I had some guys back then say, you know, I spilled more than you drank, son. And I said to one of them one night, well, maybe you shouldn't have spilled so much. You might have got here sooner. but that was, and a little bit of it, I had a little arrogance. And I believe, and I understand today, a lot of that came from the home group I was involved in, because it was a very well-respected home group. But I didn't appreciate it at first. I did learn to. And I will, like I said, I will be forever grateful for the men and women that I knew in this area, and especially the credit home group. And I'll go ahead and say a couple of their names, because they're no longer with us. People like, and I'm sure there's some people in this room that may know who I'm talking about. People like Bill Williams, Gene Hamby, Frank Bonneville, Jack Carr, Betty Wallace, you know. Met Tom Hearn one time when I was younger. But, you know, they were very instrumental, even though I was young, because back then, you know, in 02, there wasn't a lot of young 20-year-old people in the local area in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a pretty hard time relating, you know, when I first came in here when I was 22. I was told to try to relate, not compare. And Mike, who was my sponsor at the time, you know, when I asked him to sponsor me, his first question was, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, yes. He said, all right, read the first 164 pages of the big book and then we'll talk. I said, okay. It took me a few days, but I did read them. I did read the whole first 164 pages. Don't worry, I comprehended some of it, but I did grasp some things that I related to it. I understood it, that was me. And then he agreed to sponsor me. And he said, the first thing he did is he grabbed his big book. We were sitting in his car, put his hand on his big book. He said, this is what we're going to do. And if you don't like it, hit the bricks. He said, I only know one way to teach you, and that's how I was taught. And this is the only way I know how to teach you. He gave me some requirements. The first one was I was supposed to pray every day. I didn't even know how to pray. And he said, well, you know, until you develop your own concept of a power greater than yourself, you can borrow mine. So if there's anybody in this room tonight that doesn't have a concept of a power greater than yourself, you can borrow mine. But you better develop your own. This is what he told me. You better develop your own because mine's going to get you drunk. He also said that you're going to call me every day. And we set up a time where I was going to call him in the morning. And he told me the first question I'm going to ask you is, did you get your day started right? And if I said no, he told me he was going to hang up the phone on me. That did happen once. And the other requirements were I was supposed to make 90 meetings in 90 days. And in those 90, and every time I went to a meeting, I was supposed to go to 3 meetings a day. The meeting before the meeting, then the actual meeting, and then the meeting after. I was supposed to be 30 minutes early and try and stay 30 minutes late. The other requirement was to read how it works for 30 days at every meeting I went to. I was supposed to find the chairperson and get how it works and read it. And I was to shut my mouth for 30 days. He said the main reason for that was because for the first part of the meeting, all you're going to do is think about what you should say. Then you're going to share. And then you're going to, for the rest of the meeting, all you're going to think about is what you shouldn't, what you should have said. And you're not going to listen to a daggone thing. So I said, okay. But as I said, you know, I agreed and had told him I was willing to go to any lengths. And I said, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. I was that whooped when I came here the first time. Even more whooped when I came back. And, you know, we started working the steps. You know, we went through the steps by the book. It was just how it's laid out in the big book. You know, we went through the first step. And I was to read, also, I was also to read the doctor's opinion every morning for those first 30 days. I was to be on my knees in the morning and my knees at night. And the only thing I could say in the beginning was, God, please help me. And then I started, when he told me I could borrow his higher power, I remember getting on my knees and saying, my sponsor's higher power, and praying to that. You know, it was just the concept of starting the process, starting to reach out to something that was greater than me. And, you know, work the steps vigilantly. I mean, there was no stone uncovered. You know, it was I remember going down in the parlor of Craddock and getting on my knees with my sponsor, holding hands, doing the third step prayer. He had me write it on a sheet of paper, date it, and sign it after we did it. And it was like a contract with God, is what it was. Going through the fourth step with him, you know, nothing. It was a thorough inventory, the best I could at that time. More things came revealed later. Fifth step. I remember going through the fifth step with him, and I remember him asking me, where do you feel the most comfortable, other than a bar? And we ended up at NSA on the football field, and I did my fifth step with him there. Went again through 6, 7, 8, 9. I went through all the amends. By the time I ended up drinking again, my financial amends and all my amends list was complete. I did not have anything on that list that was not checked off, that I did not go make a direct amends to the people that were on that list. And then I started helping other men, doing things on a daily basis. Service work, you know, did a lot of coffee commitments, did a lot of things in the area. And then, after some time, a resentment happened. And I did not deal with that resentment the way I should have, or what I had learned to do. It took a little bit of time. From the time the resentment started to me actually picking up a drink was about 8 months. But I was mentally, spiritually drunk for months. And then I was physically drunk. And I still remember Bill Williams pulling me aside after Saturday night Craddock meeting. Because they used to kind of like to pull you aside, the old timers back then. And he said, you know, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. You sure? I said, yeah, Bill, I'm good, man. He said, because you're drunk and you don't know it yet. About 6 months after that conversation with Bill, I ended up picking up a drink. I try to do my best to learn from the people that have been here before me, that have been through it. And when they're giving me suggestions and they're telling me something, I definitely try to pay attention. I understand that we all have one day, and I've heard, you know, whoever got up first this morning is the most sober for the day, but time does mean something here. You know, experience means something here. And I love to soak it up. I will pick a old timer's brain anytime I get the chance about their experience in Alcoholics Anonymous and just their experience in life, because they can teach me. After I went back to drinking, it was very simple. I was out with my girlfriend. I had lost defense against the first drink because I had no spiritual program anymore. I had not been on my knees in I don't know how long, in the morning or at night. I don't even remember how long it had been since I had been to a meeting. At that time, I was sponsoring five gentlemen, and I hadn't talked to them in probably a few weeks. And I was sitting in a bar in Portsmouth. We ordered a late lunch. It was closer to 4 or 5 o'clock, might as well say dinner. And the waiter came up and asked what I wanted to drink, and I ordered a beer. That quick. But it did not actually happen that quick. It took, like I said, about 8 months from the resentment to now, or to then. And I was off and running that night. You know, I remember I drank half that beer and I walked in the bathroom to go to the bathroom, and I reached in my pocket, and my medallion was in my pocket. Just like this one is. And I threw it in the trash. And I said, that's it. It was 17 years before I walked back into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I will go ahead and say it was not all bad out there. For the first about 12 years of it, when I drank, I did drink alcoholically, but it wasn't what it was for the last about 5 years of my drinking. I met my wife, found a career, had children, so I remember when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous talking to my sponsor about, you know, man, if I hadn't gone back out, I'd have, 20-something years now. He asked me a very simple question. Do you think you'd have met your wife if you stayed sober? Wow. I don't know. That wasn't God's plan for me. You know, not that I definitely lost the time, but I did not lose what I learned and what I had done in Alcoholics Anonymous and the God that I had. For those last 5 years of my drinking, it was pretty rough. The last year and a half were very rough. I did kind of conceal it from my kids. I would basically wait until they went to bed. And remember how I said I was more of a bar drinker when I was younger? This time I was that lonely drunk. That loneliness that it talks about in the big book of, I didn't want to be around anybody. I wanted to go into my own little area, and I wanted to drink my sorrows away. Every once in a while, my phone would end up in my hand, and God knows what I was sending to people or calling people, but, you know, it was a total different atmosphere. I did not want to be in the limelight. I did not want to be around. So I would end up, you know, we'd put the kids to bed. I wouldn't even eat dinner with the family. I would make a plate, and my plate would be in the microwave so I could go, because if I ate, I wouldn't get where I wanted to get. It would slow me down, or I couldn't get where I wanted to. And that went on for quite a couple years. Leaving my wife in the house by herself, many a time she would come out and try and talk to me, and I'd always complain to her, why are you bringing this up to me while I'm drunk? And she was like, when the hell else am I going to bring it up to you while I'm drunk? You know, in the turmoil that I put her through for those last couple years, I didn't understand how bad it was until I got sober and she explained it to me. And, you know, for those 12 years, there was a lot of smoking pot in those first 12 years of when I went back out. And I really think that helped, you know, keep the drinking to a minimum in certain instances. But then when I got into a career where I actually had to stop that, is where the drink really took back off. And it was, and it talks about that ease and comfort that we get from a few drinks. I didn't even have to take the drink to get that ease and comfort. If I knew the drunk was there, as long as I knew I had it and I was gonna get to it and I was gonna get home, put the kids down, and I was gonna be able to go do what I needed to do, that ease and comfort already settled over me. I didn't even have to take the drink at the end. I just needed to know it was there. And that's how it went. And there were many, all those days of, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, I'll never do this again. And I knew where the solution was because I had it before. The promises had come true in my life before. And I knew where it was, but that resentment was still festering and fuming inside me. My current sponsor, I had talked to him a couple times along the way of that for the last couple years of my drinking. I definitely aided in keeping him sober for those couple years by calling him while I was drunk, I'm sure. But he was always willing to talk. You know, he'd let me babble for a minute, then he'd get off the phone. And I think he was thinking every time, oh, he might be getting closer. I remember it was, and that's the crazy part, tonight is the 2-year anniversary of my last drink. I remember going down with a buddy of mine to go fishing down outside of Clarksville. Went down there the night before, we definitely tied a serious one on that night. I wasn't a very big blackout drinker. I did blackout at times, but I could always usually piece some things together along the way, you know, not like fully lost it all. It might take me a couple days to remember some things, but it was, but that night I did completely black it out. And I was talking to Blaine before the meeting. It was probably about right now when that happened 2 years ago. Woke up that next morning, and was questioning how I got where I was at. And I remember we were supposed to go fishing that morning. I walked out to my truck, this is the pretty cool part about this. This is the cup I took my last drink out of.
Oh.
This cup was in a cooler empty. There was a liter of Crown Royal that was empty that had been opened at about 5 o'clock that night. And I remember reaching in the back of my truck, the back seat of my truck, to get my clothes to go fishing. And I shut the door and I caught my reflection in the back window of my truck. And I remember the first thing that came to mind is, what the F are you doing? And then the next thought was, you know where the solution is. And I said, I'm not going fishing. I threw my stuff in the back of the truck, back in his back seat, walked into the fish camp, and I told the guys, I had actually blown my knee out in Texas hunting. Actually drunk, I blew it out. I went hunting while I drank. So I told them my knee was hurting, and I couldn't go fishing. And I got in the truck and I started leaving from Clarksville area back to Prince George. And I was just totally exhausted, broke, busted, disgusted, just couldn't do it anymore. And I remember I reached back out to that God that I had before, and it was a very simple prayer. It was, God, we did it before, let's do it again. And how it talks about in the big book, you know, we are rocketed into that fourth dimension of spirituality. I believe it opened that door just enough. That willingness was there just enough, and my God can work with that. And he kicked it wide open. The next thought was, I needed to get to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as fast as possible. And this was 17 years since I had left AA. Did try and call a couple people that I surprisingly still had their phone numbers in my phone from almost 17 years ago. Found out that some of them were dead. And the next thing came to mind was call the intergroup. So I called the Richmond intergroup and I talked to a gentleman. And it was funny because he said his name was Bob. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. You got the same name as the co-founder? He was like, well, I'm not that Bob. I was like, I know that. Come on, man, calm down. You know, we discussed, you know, some meetings in the area where I was heading. He had set me up to go to a meeting around noon or 1 o'clock, I think it was. And I got home and I could tell something was up with my wife. Come to find out that night that I had blacked out. We had been on the phone for about an hour of me complaining and going nuts about everything in life, and I didn't even remember talking to her. And I remember looking on the internet for an AA meeting, and I found one at 10 o'clock in Petersburg. It was called the Roundtable Group. And I looked at my phone and I said, I can make it. And I got there a couple minutes late, but I did make it. And I picked up a white chip. Met some people there. They introduced me to the app, which I thought was amazing, because we definitely didn't have that before. When I first got sober, I didn't even have a cell phone when I was 22. So when I needed to talk to my sponsor, or I needed to talk to another member of AA, I had to wait till I got home, you know. And at that time, I was living with my dad, and we lived in Ivor, and I was coming to meetings down here in Suffolk, so I got a 45-minute drive before I could talk to anybody, you know. But that was a lot of time with just me and my higher power, you know, and me turning the radio off, you know, and just talking to my God, and or pulling over on the side of the road and getting out and opening the passenger door and asking God to get in the car with me. And I still do that today. And then have that conversation. I've never been one that, you know, I heard the 500-pound phone, I've heard all that. I got no problem picking this thing up. Really never have. Because when I was desperate enough, I was willing to call anybody to help me. I've heard that acronym for God, the gift of desperation, and I was definitely given that when I decided to come back. I will say, like I said, I'm very grateful for what I did have before. Not to say that it made it easier, but I definitely had a better understanding coming back. I understood what I needed to do. Try and show up the meetings early, back on my knees first thing in the morning. I did not have a sponsor yet for the first 5 days. I was looking, and then I ended up getting a hold of the gentleman that is now my sponsor. We had, like I said, I helped keep him sober while I was still drinking. We discussed. He said, you know, I asked him to sponsor me. He said, well, we'll talk about it. You know, and it's been my understanding with sponsoring gentlemen, because I do only work with gentlemen. Being a sponsor or taking on, it is a commitment, you know, and I'm not just going to say, yes, let's roll. you know, I want to make sure the person that's involved with it is committed, and they're going to want, they want to do this. Because it does take time, it does take, and everybody's time is valuable here in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I've learned. You know, the people that helped me go through the steps this time, I like to say that I was so sick it took two of them. And it was pretty cool. My current sponsor brought in basically a big book teacher, we might as well say, and I had to be interviewed basically by this gentleman to see if I was worthy of his, not worthy of his time, but if I had the willingness to actually go through it. And we talked for about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours through Zoom, because the gentleman is actually in Canada. After our discussion, you know, he said, okay, you're a retread. You do have a knowledge of what's going on here. He said, what we need to do is sharpen your tools, knock the dust off, enhance what you had before, and get you back out helping people. And I was given a time frame that we would meet every Monday night from 7 to 9 on Zoom, and we would go through the steps. I was not given an option other than that. It was, this is what we're going to do, take it or leave it. And I was basically given the same story the same thing that I was told when I first got sober. This is what we're going to do. And if you don't like it, hit the bricks. Because this is where the solution lies. And we went through it. You know, there was no balking. There was no, you know, I understood, you know, coming back. And it talks about in the big book that the first step in recovery is fully conceding to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. That's funny because it's not the first of the 12. You know, when and in order for me to do that, I had to understand why I'm an alcoholic. You know, not what makes me an alcoholic, like when I start, I can't stop. You know, things of that nature. You know, why am I an alcoholic? The reason I'm an alcoholic is because alcohol changes my perception of reality. You know, it makes everything better, so I see, or I feel that it does. And, you know, being powerless over alcohol, you know, I do understand being, my life is unmanageable. You know, I couldn't make a living. I couldn't, you know, my personal relations. I couldn't have personal relations with other people. You know, the bedevilments that it talks about in the big book. Those are the 8 questions of unmanageability. And when we went through those, all 8 of them, I answered yes. That is me. That means my life is unmanageable. Believing that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, that wasn't an issue coming back because I had already had that contact with a power greater than myself before and had already reached back out of it. And you know, I truly believe God stepped right back in without almost missing a beat. Because he blessed me to be around some great people in Alcoholics Anonymous again. Was able to run into Steve down here. We came down to hear a speaker down here. What a great feeling that was, see him walk in the room. And it was like 20 years ago. Hey, how you doing? You know. You know, and I do remember when I first got the app. I remember I lived in Prince George, now I do live in Sussex. I'll explain that here in a minute. I remember looking on that app for a meeting in Prince George, and I couldn't find one. Any day of the week, there was not a meeting in Prince George County. And I'm sitting there saying, how is this possible? And I even said to myself, when I was only about 2 days sober, well, maybe we'll start one day. But I got to get my stuff together first. And back into the steps, you know, we went through one, two, did the third step. And I got definitely a better understanding of the third step going through the steps this time. And the gentleman in, in Canada, his name is Randy. So I might refer to him a little bit in this. And the understanding that I got is it is making a decision, you know, to go through the rest of the steps, to take the action to go through the rest of the steps. And that process is where I actually turn my life and my will over. What I'm actually doing in step three is turning my thoughts and my actions over to a care of God, as I understand. You know, my will is a culmination of my thoughts, and my life is a culmination of my actions. You know, I was also told here, think better than you act and act better than you think. I could think what I want as long as I don't act on it. And then I'm going to need that process to go into the fourth step. You know, we did another thorough inventory. I do remember calling my sponsor and saying, man, this list is a whole lot less than it was when I was 22. And I'll be honest with you, there were times when I was back out there that I remembered having to make amends to people and doing all this stuff that I did before. And I was like, man, I don't really want to have to do that again. So, you know, I didn't. It was actually pretty amazing to look back through the fourth step and then going into the fifth with my current sponsor, my new fourth and fifth step. How much I had made the program of Alcoholics Anonymous a way of life. And it was basically second nature in a lot of things I was doing throughout those 17 years I was out there. And it really flourished in the inventory it showed. You know, there were some things that I had written down and things that we were going over, and he's like, you already dealt with that. It was actually to the point I wanted to be so thorough that I didn't want to miss anything, so I was reaching for stuff to put on the list. And I understood, you know, that nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And that was one thing that my current sponsor told me when we started. Don't lie to me. I can't help you if you lie to me. I won't lie to you. You won't lie to me. We can't help each other if we lie to each other. And I agree. And to this day, I haven't lied to him. I don't know everything that but I'm pretty damn sure he hasn't lied to me.
Jeez Louise.
That's my time. All right. Steve warned me earlier. You know, and the amends process, you know, going through 6 and 7, and I understand, you know, where it talks about in the 12 and 12 about that separates the men from the boys. You know, I hear a lot about, you know, 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. For me, my maintenance step starts at 6. You know, that's my character defects. My shortcomings in step 7 are the cause of my character defects in step 6. But I have to do a thorough inventory, and I have to do a thorough fifth step to even understand what they mean. I have no clue unless I be thoroughly honest and go through it. Because I was sick. Definitely got sicker when I was out there. And I love the acronym for sick. Spiritually ill can kill. And I was definitely spiritually ill for a long time. You know, and then going through some amends, I've been able to go back and make amends for some things that I've done. The biggest things that I've been doing on a daily basis, trying to, is the living amends. Where we were living when I was still drinking, we were living on the farm that my in-laws own and a house that they own. So I was able to provide as far as bills and stuff like that, but I wasn't truly providing for my family. And 3 months ago yesterday, I signed a contract to buy my family a home. I had got an 8-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter, to who up until 3 months ago had to share a room because I couldn't provide them with a home that had 3 bedrooms. Not anymore. You know, that's the blessing of that God has granted me. No greater gift that I could do for a living amends to my wife and children to be able to do that. It's only by God's grace, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a God greater than myself that has let it happen. All I had to do was take some few simple suggestions, follow a few simple rules. Keep God first, keep staying sober first one day at a time, and things got better. Not to say that it's not great, it's great every day, but it's a whole lot better than it was every day. Going into, I try and live in page 86, 87, and 88. That's part of my morning routine now. You know, I'm still on my knees every morning. My current sponsor does not ask me, did you get your day started right? But I do ask the guys that I work with. And did get the pleasure of hanging up on one not too long ago. Going into, you know, carrying the message to other alcoholics and practicing these principles in all my affairs, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I have to do the work to have the spiritual awakening. I can't just step in here, go from 1 to 12, and it's all going to be okay. That's not my experience. The other thing that I can say, you know, when I decided to come back, there was no reservation if I was able to drink like a normal person anymore. And the best suggestion I can give anybody in this room, if you do have any reservation, go drink. Because it's going to show you that you're an alcoholic if you're a true alcoholic. We can't do this alone, you know. I need help. And I love the acronym for help, His Ever-Loving Presence. You know, I have to ask for that help from a power greater than myself. And I have to have a sponsor. I like acronyms, so I'll use another one. The acronym for sponsor is Sober Person. Sober person offering newcomers suggestions on recovery. because, you know, and it without the guidance of somebody that's been through this before, I can't do it. You know, I can't just read this book and be able to do it. I have to have the guidance. You know, being able to give some things back to the community, you know, almost a year ago, last July. Well, actually, we started it almost a year prior to that. A couple of us in Prince George and the area had started talking. And today, there is a meeting in Prince George County. And it's the Prince George Study Group. I'm one of the founding members. Blaine is another founding member. And it's been a great thing to bring it to the community and give back. It's great to see my life change, you know, see the people around me, their life change, you know, my kids, my wife, but I will tell you there is no greater gift than seeing somebody else get sober. To see somebody come in here, totally spiritually bankrupt, hitting bottom, you know, And I've also, I'm going to go ahead and say this too, because I forgot to, but, you know, I hear around these rooms that everybody's bottom is different. It better not be. Hitting bottom is an inside job. It is not the circumstances of my life that caused me to hit bottom. They can make things bad for me. The lost wives, the jails, the institutions, the lost jobs, the DUIs, all these things. The circumstances of my life cannot be my bottom. Because if I get sober, what am I going to do when I get them all back? Mm-hmm. When I came in here with that gift of desperation, I was totally spiritually bankrupt. And the only thing, and that is, it was an inside job. God has fixed the inside. And all this other things, they're back. You know, the things that I didn't have are here in my life. But ultimately, my God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous remains first. So I'm not in fear of, I've got it back, what's going to happen? You know, I love the fact that powerlessness only shows up in this book once. And that's in the formation of the first step. Power is in this book 77 times. You know, and I heard a speaker say, you know, he asked his sponsor, what do I do with all this power over alcoholism? He said, give it away. What a simple concept. Give it away. And today, like I said, the day starts one way and it ends the same way it did almost 2 years ago, with prayer. Thanking God, asking Him to forgive me for my failures and guide me to what corrective measures need to be taken so I can help the next alcoholic. You know, I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And God granted me that. Because we can recover here. People recovering, you know. People, sober people, drink again. People living in sobriety do not. So, I think I'm almost there, Steve.
Yeah.
And there's something that I always read out of the big book. I actually did this when I was in my early years, and I've been doing it ever since whenever I tell my story. This comes from page 164 in A Vision for You from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great offense will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen. You know, I heard this a long time ago, and I definitely relate to it, that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't open up the gates of heaven and let me in. It opened up the gates of hell and let me out. Thanks for letting me share.
One more time for Mitch. That's enough. Prince George Study Group, Mondays, right?
Saturdays.
Excuse me, Saturdays. Right. Seven?
Eight.
Hey. Prince George, though. It is in Prince George. I've been there a couple times. It's sick. All right, let me just find my page.
Spot me out.
Yes, sir. Mm.
All right.
Mind me.
plan to discreetly pass it as I was walking up to the, just that, so engrossing okay. story. Our seventh tradition states that every A group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donations to the church and supplies. The rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements? I got one. This home group, Into Action, we're presenting a workshop on effective sponsorship. That's something that we feel very dearly about. We're having three speakers, Roger W., Joyce K., Adita, and it's going to be Friday, April 25th. There's going to be dinner from 7 to 7:45, a workshop from 7:45 to 9, and that's on effective sponsorship, and there'll be an Ask It Basket. And it'll be here, of course.
In that room. In that building.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Play it by ear. No, I'm just kidding. It'll be in that building over there. Mike.
My home group, Friends Philadelphia, meets Thursdays at 7 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church. The day before your workshop, we'll be having three home group members celebrating their anniversaries. One is Mike K. He's a carryover from March. He wouldn't be able to be with us. And we have also have John D. and Matt S. So we've got three celebrants, and the speaker's going to be Brandon.
And that's the Thursday before?
Thursday the 24th.
Brown bag. Be there, brown bag.
I'm Blaine, I'm an alcoholic.
What's up, Blaine?
On May 26th, that Saturday, after those two events, we will be having a speaker. Mitch and I will be celebrating 2 years. And his grand sponsor, my great-grand sponsor, Bob, will be speaking. So come out and join us. Sounds like you can make it.
It's going to be a good weekend. Heck yeah. Awesome. Anyone else? Besides speaker meetings on Fridays at 8, we also have a big book study group on Tuesdays. We're in the big book right now, and we rotate between the 12 and 12. I've asked Bob to present the chips. Are y'all finished back there? Jake, Mike. I've asked Bob to present the chips.
Y'all scared me.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Here at InterAction, we have a chip system to denote your length of sobriety. First, there's a white chip. Anybody that wants to try this lifestyle, heard anything tonight that you thought may work for you or that drew you to it, come and pick up a white chip. That's the first time I've done this about 5 times. First time I've ever given a white chip.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, orange, 30 days. Gold, 60. Red, 90. Blue, 6 months. Green, 9 months. It's green. Couldn't get it out. Yellow, year or more from another home group. And if you're a member of this home group, we have the medallions with the Roman numerals of your years of sobriety on them. Okay, anybody else for a white chip? Any more? Okay, thanks for letting me chip.
Nice. We at the Into Action group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me after the meeting and we'll see if you get one. Into Action is a home group. If anyone here is looking for a group to join, you're welcome here. For those of you who will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer.